Good evening. COVID cases in the United States continue to rise. Another Russian scandal for the Trump administration. The new police budget. No one is happy. And a young violinist killed by cops is memorialized in Washington Square Park. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, told a U.S. Senate committee today 100,000 Americans will be affected with COVID-19 each day unless the nation recommits to social distancing.
When you have an outbreak in one part of the country, even though in other parts of the country they're doing well, they are vulnerable. I made that point very clearly last week at a press conference. We can't just focus on those areas that are having the surge. It puts the entire country at risk. We are now having 40,000+ new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around. And so I am very concerned.
Can you make any kind of estimate on what we're looking at overall on the number of deaths before this is over? You made an estimate back in March. Yeah. Between 100,000 and 200,000, but we have a lot more information now, and we're already at 126,000 deaths.
Right. I can't make a estimation because that would have to be modeled out, because when models are done, and that's where those original numbers came from, Senator, as I've said very often, models are as good as the assumptions that you put into the model, and those assumptions often change depending upon what your response is. So I would really be hesitant to give a number that will come back and either be contradicted and overblown or underblown. But I think it's important to tell you and the American public that I'm very concerned because it could get very bad.
Dr. Fauci. Fauci added, there's no guarantee that ongoing efforts will produce a safe and effective vaccine to prevent infection by the virus. Meanwhile, researchers in China are sounding the alarm. A new strain of flu virus, common among some farm pigs, has the potential to erupt into an easily transmissible pandemic in people.
The Chinese, over the last week or two, have identified a virus in the environment. It has not yet shown to be infecting humans, but it is exhibiting what we call reassortment capabilities. In other words, when you get a brand new virus that turns out to be a pandemic virus, it's either due to mutations and or the reassortment or exchanges of genes. And they're seeing virus in swine, in pigs now, that have characteristics of the 2009 H1N1, of the original 1918, which many of our flu viruses have remnants of that in it, as well as segments from other hosts like swine. When they all mix up together and they contain some of the elements that might make them susceptible to being transmitted to humans, you always have the possibility that you might have another swine flu type outbreak as we had in 2009. It's something that still is in the stage of examination. It's not so-called an immediate threat where you're seeing infections, but it's something we need to keep our eye on.
Dr. Anthony Fauci speaking to the United States Senate earlier today. More than 126,000 Americans have died from COVID-19 and millions have lost their jobs. The rise in cases in the Sun Belt has prompted New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to reassess plans to reopen the state. He says New Yorkers are disregarding social distancing and more international travelers are heading into the city. Both could contribute to a new outbreak. New York City is scheduled to enter phase three of the state's reopening plan next week. That would allow some indoor dining at restaurants, but Cuomo says there are issues we have to think through. Cuomo also blamed President Trump for the renewed concerns. Trump has pushed for a rapid reopening of the economy. And the New York Times published a front-page story today on a leak claiming Trump ignored intelligence that Russia had offered a bounty to the Afghan Taliban militia for the killing of American troops. Today's revelations focused on a 2019 car bombing that killed three Marines. Trump has denied he was briefed on the intelligence, claiming there was not enough proof to merit presidential attention. But the Times reports the allegations of Russian bounties was included in the president's daily brief document, a daily compilation of classified information. Several tell-all accounts of the White White House have claimed Trump never reads the briefs or pays much attention to technical information unrelated to his reelection bid. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany fielded questions today in a testy press briefing where she accused the New York Times of acting irresponsibly by publishing the leaks.
These are rogue intelligence officers who are imperiling our troops' lives. We will not be able to get, very likely not be able to get a consensus on this intelligence because of what was leaked to the New York Times. And you have both the NSC, ODNI, and CIA all noting what damage this leaks does, not just to the safety of our troops, which is paramount, but to the ability of the United States to aggregate information from our allies and have assets and get this valuable information. So who's doing it? It's
members of the IC are going after Trump. Is that what you're saying?
It very possibly could be. And if that's the case, it is absolutely despicable.
What steps are you planning on taking to try to find those sources of the leaks?
Well, make no mistake, the DOJ has done several criminal leak referrals, 120 in 2017, 88 in 2018, 104 on average per year under President Trump. So we do take those steps.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, the IC is shorthand for intelligence community. A former United States Marine and senior fellow with the Center for International Policy, Matthew Ho, resigned in protest from his post in Afghanistan with the State Department over the American escalation of the war. He says the issue is why the intelligence was leaked at this time.
It would seem that anyone who is leaking this story, whether it's true or not, wants to see an increase in tensions with Russia because that's going to be the natural derivative of it. So whoever has leaked this story, for whatever reasons they're doing it, must understand the consequences that this is going to increase tensions with Russia. Coming as it does now at the time of the pandemic, as well as the time of the protests and the defund the police movement, this wades into a very crowded media space, as well as, too, if it's true that this story has been, or this report, I should say, has been known to U.S. intelligence for a year and a half now, basically, why is it being leaked now? Of course, there's all the political aspects of it, too. I mean, we are only a handful of months at this point from the election in November, and the politics of it must certainly be understood. It's well understood the U.S. intelligence community and Donald Trump have a strained relationship, and that's putting it kindly, I guess. I think there are multiple reasons why it was leaked now. However, again, without the person coming forward and explaining it, it's difficult to kind of divine their intentions.
A distraction from a distraction from a distraction.
The way that intelligence is used, leaked intelligence is used for political purposes over and over again, the way that we have seen former intelligence officials like John Brennan and James Clapper say, Michael Hayden, all people who ran the CIA or the NSA, who have become talking heads on cable news, but more so have become heroes within what's called the resistance. You know, the resistance of Donald Trump, that Democratic element that calls themselves the resistance, they see these intelligence officials as heroes, as people standing up to Trump. So they've become very politicized. And they still, of course, have many friends, colleagues, subordinates, former subordinates, etc., within the intelligence community. And the political nature of those men cannot be discounted in terms of how these things are leaked, as well as the fact that intelligence is always leaked for political purposes in the United States. And it's often manipulated for political purposes, regardless of which administration is in power or who controls the Congress. The timing is not curious when you look at it from a political aspect.
They're piling on him. They're just piling everything on Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever sticks,
you know, the fact that, you know, you look at like the Ukraine gate, the way that started off with an anonymous whistleblower releasing or talking about a transcript. We're not seeing any particular details aside from what these anonymous officials keep saying. So you can't even confirm that. There's no way to verify any of this. The report may well be very true that prisoners in Afghanistan were interrogated, and that's where this information comes from. But the Afghan government tortures as a matter of routine. And when you torture someone, you get the intelligence you want. You don't get what's true or correct. You get what you want. That has to be, I'm very much of the mindset that probably what has occurred was this report did come out of Afghanistan about something involving the Russians. Because it involved the Russians, it made its way all the way up to the top levels of Washington, D.C., where it was determined that, as their intelligence officials are saying now, and as the White House is saying and others are saying, the report was deemed not credible. I would believe that, particularly if this information came about as a result of interrogating prisoners who were being tortured, which is what the Afghan security forces do. They torture people. You know, again, Paul, like the whole thing, unless we see this in paper, unless we have like an actual national intelligence estimate that is written, that is then declassified and released to the public, there's no way we know what actually did occur or what occurred. The United States has been on the way of getting out of Afghanistan for the last 2 years. Since the spring of 2018, Donald Trump has basically said to Zalmay Khalilzad, his envoy to Afghanistan, move forward on this, get a peace deal, let's get out of Afghanistan. This type of plot would have to be approved at the highest levels of the Russian government. I mean, the president of Russia himself would most likely have to approve something like this. And I can't imagine that, again, would even the notions of revenge, which would probably be very deep and sincere for many. But then that begs the question of why are the Russians only now seeking revenge in Afghanistan when we've been there since 2001?
Matthew Ho is a former United States Marine and senior fellow with the Center for International Policy. The Times reports there's disagreement among intelligence officials about the suspected Russian plot and the evidence linking the attack on the Marines to the unproven Russian plot. The Russian government has denied the reports as incorrect. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. And the New York City Council is preparing to vote Wednesday on a 2021 fiscal year budget. The $88.1 billion package is down from last year's $95.3 billion, reflecting a $9 billion shortfall caused by the coronavirus crisis. But advocates of the movement to defund the police are unhappy, despite a more than $1 billion cut to the NYPD's $6 billion budget. In the new budget, the new police budget has been heralded by the mayor, Bill de Blasio, for, among other things, shifting school safety agents from police to the education department. But public advocate Jumaane Williams said today much of those cuts are nothing more than budgetary tricks.
There are two things that I believe were very minimal when it came to the discussion of the budget, and I thought was kind of the bottom of the barrel. And the first is, if we have a hiring freeze for every single city agency, that should include the NYPD. There's no reason why we're not hiring additional guidance counselors. We're not hiring additional nurses. We're not hiring additional homeless outreach workers. Across the city, agencies can use additional resources. By just saying we're hiring additional police officers, I think it's sending the wrong message at a time where everybody's clamoring for a different discussion about what public safety means and law enforcement's role in it. And similarly, the second, as a discussion of how we change public safety, we wanted to make sure that we are moving toward a restorative justice model, in that we should have a discussion about how discipline is meted out in the schools. And I think most folks would agree school safety agents probably shouldn't be the ones that are responsible for discipline. And so we have to reimagine the current system of school safety agents and how that can transition to restorative justice models without causing, of course, 5,500, especially black and brown, particularly women, to lose their jobs. And I think there's a way that we can do that. We just need to get a commitment over the next year that that's going to get done.
Advocate Jumaane Williams. Williams threatened to use a little-known power of his office. The city charter says any city taxes have to be signed off by the public advocate. He says if it isn't hiring guidance counselors, nurses, and homeless outreach workers, why should the city hire more police? Meanwhile, outside City Hall, hundreds of protesters continued their week-long campout near the Brooklyn Bridge. Jesus Gonzalez is a member of the Center for Popular Democracy and a spokesperson for Communities United for Police Reform. He says the budget is a big disappointment to anti-police brutality activists.
I am usually, amongst my friends, I'm usually the optimist. I thought there was a possibility that the New York City Council and the mayor would get this right. The momentum, city's in uproar. Like, there's an occupation happening at City Hall. Thousands and thousands of people are out on the streets these past few weeks. Millions across the country. George Floyd gets killed. There's more abuse, more repression by the city and our state. And now a budget that reflects the values of our leadership in the city. It doesn't redirect at least $1 billion from the NYPD to Black and Latinx communities, other communities of colors that's been devastated, man. Like, we have aunts, uncles, parents, cousins, neighbors who have died. New York City Council nor the mayor is responsibly addressing that. It seems like there may be an increase to policing under this new deal. It doesn't remove cops from schools. It doesn't treat students like students. It continues to criminalize them. A lot of the conversation sometimes is what, when we talk about cops out of schools, is centered around the feelings of council members, the mayor, labor unions, other folks. It doesn't center the voices of youth who have been protesting all last week and for years on out. When I was a teen, we launched a campaign in 1998 for cops out of schools when the NYPD took over school safety agents initially in response to, like, Columbine. This is not a new call. It continues to cut our safety net, cuts to education, 22,000 city employees. There's going to be a hiring freeze for guidance counselors for the next 4 years. Literally slashes guidance counselors from the South Bronx and places like East New York. Some of the most devastated communities is just cutting from there. And then it does things like it includes fringe and benefits and other, like, expenses to build things and infrastructure. It, like, includes that. And they say that it reaches $1.5 billion. But that's not the demand. That's not the people's demand. The people's demand was at least $1 billion in real cuts and at least $1 billion in reinvestments in social services. And that's not what we got here. They're touting it as a victory. They got the number 1 billion plus from us, and they think we're going to get fooled by funny math. It's really manipulative. Paul, I'm just stunned a little bit, but, you know, a lot of folks are not surprised. I don't know how you move forward with a budget that doesn't address some of the problems that we're confronting, the devastating economic impacts that we're confronting as a city.
What about the occupation at City Hall?
On the record, I would like to say that there's Black leaders, amazing friends and comrades that are leading that effort, and I'll let them speak to the future of that. I will say that as a participant, it's a necessary space to amplify the demands of cutting the NYPD's budget, of reimagining public safety in our city. It has done something magical, and so I hope it does. This morning, the response from the mayor has been deploy more officers on protesters. That will only spark more energy. I'm sometimes, like, speechless on this stuff. It's something that we shouldn't be surprised about, and I can see smirks from other activists that are like, dude, you're surprised. I'm not surprised. It never fails to stun me how incompetent our city government can be.
Where does this movement go next?
I'm an optimist. I feel like even the New York City Council that votes for this budget will get there. This is like a new concept for some, but it's not for those of us that have been on the front lines confronting violence in our community.
Any last thoughts?
We're not fooled by their funny math, and this fight is not new and is far from over. We'll continue to push and reimagining how public safety happens in our communities.
Jesus Gonzalez is a member of Center for Popular Democracy and a spokesperson for Communities United for Police Reform. PBA President Pat Lynch also blasted the proposals. He blamed an increase in shootings across the city on a lack of police. In related news, President Trump threatened in a tweet a 10-year sentence on two protesters who allegedly tossed a balloon full of red paint on the iconic arch, a memorial to George Washington at Washington Square Park. It follows another incident last Wednesday where a 37-year-old man was busted for painting slave owner on the Washington statue. Washington owned several hundred slaves he inherited from his wife. Washington Square Park has been the site of numerous protests over its history, and especially since the killing of George Floyd. On June 28th, as a peaceful march with the Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and Against Police Brutality entered the park, it was met by pepper spray and nightsticks. An organizer of the march is Jay Walker. He describes what happened.
People who had been pepper sprayed, desperately trying to flush their eyeballs out, and a lot of tension with a bunch of NYPD. Our marshals, though, had remained in place, and so they were in the process of trying to de-escalate the situation.
How did it start?
We don't know for sure. A truck with a loudspeaker playing music that we were not aware of, the organizers were not aware of, apparently joined the very end of the march at some point. When the end of the march got to Washington Square, the truck parked itself on Waverly Place just west of the arch and played music. And so apparently a sort of spontaneous little dance party began on Waverly Place, sort of right at the arch. People were having a good time. Apparently one person in that crowd took a Sharpie and scribbled over the letters NYPD on the back of a police car that was parked there on Waverly.
So are they out of jail now, the people who were arrested?
No, they're not. And what we were told yesterday by National Lawyers Guild, the person that was initially arrested was charged with vandalizing, with graffiti for the scribbling with the Sharpie. And apparently now both that person and the other people who were subsequently arrested have all been charged with assaulting a police officer.
Jay Walker is an organizer of the Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and Against Police Brutality. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.